This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. State lawmakers are considering a new voter ID bill. This time, some Republicans want to put it in front of voters as a constitutional amendment. The court struck down the state's last voter ID law because it was unconstitutional. So how might a new bill compare to the old one? Meanwhile, former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder rallied Democrats at the state party's annual fundraiser last week. How will this call influence Democrats' efforts to regain seats in the General Assembly? Joining us to talk about that and more is Jeff DeBerry, WUNC Capitol Bureau Chief. Welcome back, Jeff.
Good to see you, Frank.
Let's talk about this voter ID bill and the latest efforts. Some state lawmakers are working to possibly craft a new bill.
Listeners will, many probably, remember a very contentious bill that was passed 4 years ago. It's known as the voter ID measure. It required photo ID at the polls, but it did a number of other things, including reducing early voting, eliminating same-day registration, and also doing away with pre-registration for teens, 16 and 17-year-olds here in the state. And that was ultimately struck down by a federal appellate court with what judges said was almost surgical-like precision in going after African-American voters. That's one of those takeaway lines from this big, long verdict, this big ruling that came out of that court. Challenge. So that, you know, never went into effect. And lawmakers, largely Republicans, many Republicans are in support of voter ID. They've promised for a while, this is not some secret, that they're going to take another crack at it. And what I've learned is that they're considering, and as of now, their plan is to roll this out as a proposed constitutional referendum, which would mean you and I, if we go to the polls, and anyone who votes in 2018 would be faced with the decision of whether or not to amend the state constitution to require photo ID at the polls.
Only photo ID? Because that was at the heart of why the bill they passed before was racially discriminatory, according to the courts, was some of these other measures that restricted the vote, and in particular, you targeted African-Americans. So would we look at a bill that only talks about photo ID, or are there these other restrictions going to be part of it?
One of the things we have heard, including from some fairly prominent Republicans, including former Governor Pat McCrory, who said a couple of months ago that he's calling on the legislature to pass a clean voter ID bill, which wouldn't include these other things, early voting, same-day registration. When it comes to a constitutional referendum, inherently, the language needs to be fairly simple. You can't have various provisions and nuances. I mean, you can't read like a bill if it's going to go on the ballot. So we don't know those details yet, and that would be a key within this proposed constitutional referendum. What kinds of IDs would be acceptable, exempt, and that, of course, would, you know, probably factor into what kind of legal challenge this would get down the road, because inevitably it would likely get a legal challenge.
And just because it's a constitutional amendment doesn't mean it's free from that. As we learned from Amendment 1, you can also have constitutional amendments that are unconstitutional.
Correct. And perhaps slightly more contextual to this issue, in Missouri last November, voters there approved voter ID by a 63-36 margin, somewhere along those lines. And as of now, it is statute in the state of Missouri, but there have been legal challenges. Those are pending. So we will see what happens here with that. One other thing I would just note is that there are seven states that do have strict photo ID laws in this country, just for some context.
And does this mean we've been talking now about the so-called clean bill, particularly if it were to be a constitutional amendment on the ballot? Are there still thoughts of creating a more complicated bill that would restrict voter the way we vote in the state even more and through other means, or is that off the table at the moment?
One important thing to remember is that this voter ID bill, the one from 2013, was struck down by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, which conservatives like to note is a left-leaning bench at this point. It has transformed over the last 20 years. It used to be one of the more conservative benches. It died there, or it was killed there, in part because they struck it down. Republicans did appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, but this was during that 15-month window or so where there were eight justices. They were deadlocked. It was 4-4, so the decision kicked back down to Richmond. Now, if they were to pass the exact same law today or a pretty similar law and it got to the U.S. Supreme Court, would a nine-justice court, one with Justice Gorsuch, rule differently, favorably for North Carolina lawmakers? That's an interesting question.
So they might,
I don't have an answer.
All right, so we'll see what happens then on voter ID as that makes its way through. And of course, none of this is public yet, but this is what you're hearing from your reporting.
Yep.
All right, so this past weekend, former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder was the guest speaker of the Democratic Party's annual fundraiser in this state. Holder criticized the impact of gerrymandering in the state and urged his audience to stay in the political process. So how does this fit now with the Democratic efforts to regain seats in the General Assembly?
I think this is the latest example. Think of Al Gore, right? After Al Gore lost the presidential race in 2000, he took on this task of being an environmentalist, largely. Now, he's has long been a politician. He's a politician promoting and talking about these environmental issues. And Eric Holder, obviously not the stature of former Vice President Al Gore, but Holder has said that gerrymandering and redistricting is going to be his pet project, something he's going to spend a lot of time focusing on. And President Obama has indicated that he's going to be involved in this effort as well. So Holder was in the state over the weekend, and the governor, Roy Cooper, says that if Democrats are to get majorities in the North Carolina General Assembly in 2020, which we should note would be a tall task, they would turn this thing over to independent redistricting. And some of this is it's very interesting. I think some of it is political, and it plays well to a lot of people on both sides of the aisle who have seen maps, who feel that they are not fairly represented, and that perhaps the constituencies in this state have been left behind to some degree. Gerrymandering happens all over the country. It happens under Republican and Democratic rule. This is something that's going to get a lot more attention. I think it's worth noting that while Governor Cooper did say you can take this to the bank, meaning if Democrats win in 2020, if they have control, this will go to an independent redistricting commission or body, whatever it may be. He doesn't actually make that decision. It would have to be Democrats at the legislature. And while they're all or many of them apparently are on the same page on this now, when you come into power, are you going to be as ready to let go of one of the biggest power things you get to do?
That's right. That's the big problem for gerrymandering. Everybody claims to hate it, but once you're in power, you're not going to get rid of the process, because once you draw the maps, you can live with them for the next 10 years. 2020, of course, being the next time that happens. Two elections between now and then, the 2020 and, of course, the 2018. We take a look at Republicans' fortunes, particularly at the national level with regard to the health bill and the impact that might have on the 2018 elections. It could give the Republicans cause and pause to think about what might happen in 2020, given the turmoil in politics today. But again, it's real hard to let go of the reins.
I have heard from one redistricting supporter who he said to me once, in a casual conversation, if this is going to happen, if independent redistricting is going to happen in the state of North Carolina, it'll happen in a year that ends in a 9. So before another election, before another round of maps are drawn, and it would actually be the party in power. So in this case, potentially Republicans saying, all right, we're going to ship it off over here because we see the writing on the wall. We don't want to not be able to draw the maps in a couple of years. And you know what? We'd also like our friends in the Democratic Party for them not to be able to draw those maps either.
Sign on with us. And we should also note that the U.S. Supreme Court has taken on the question of political gerrymandering, mm-hmm. not just racial gerrymandering, which, of course, this state legislature was caught doing by the courts. Political gerrymandering has been a fact of life for a long time, and that ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court on that particular case could have a bearing on whether or not we'll see an
that could
district.
Be a landmark, monumental yeah. case in the political landscape in this country. That's a case out of Wisconsin. Justices are going to take it up this fall. I think the earliest we would get a ruling there would be late November, early December. Could be next summer, but that has potentially huge implications.
All right, let's talk about some of the bills on Governor Cooper's desk right now. An energy bill that is kind of a mixed bag for renewable energy fans, a bill that would help solar industry but hurt the wind industry. Tell us more.
Yeah, this would open up some regulations for solar in the state. Supporters of it say that it would eventually increase access, it would reduce costs, and it is something that many Republicans, pro-job Republicans, are in favor of. And this negotiation between Duke Energy, between retailers, between folks in the solar industry, this is something that happened behind closed doors for months. But it was a carefully crafted bill. We're talking about the solar piece of it now. And Roy Cooper, the governor, was in favor of that. So it emerged and it got going. But that's in the House. Then in the Senate, there is a prominent senator named Harry Brown who is hung up on wind. He does not want wind farms. He does not want wind energy to be moving forward, particularly in his district. So within this energy bill, there's also a moratorium on wind farms for a year and a half. And as the governor said last week, this is essentially trying to pit renewables against each other. And that is what it is, right? I mean, on one hand, he's got something that would strengthen the solar industry and at the same time kind of just, you know, cut the legs off, for lack of a better term, of the wind industry here in the state for a while. So this is one he has not signed. He has about 75 bills remaining on his desk, and he could sign it. He could veto it. He could let it become law without his signature. It's interesting. We talk, you know, occasionally about these super majorities, and Republicans, when in lockstep, have enough votes to override any gubernatorial veto. This didn't pass with a wide margin in the House. So if he vetoes this, it might sustain.
But he's got a problem because it's good for, roughly speaking, how does it support the solar industry or promote solar?
It would make it easier for regular folks to put solar panels on their homes. And the belief from the economic types and the energy types is that if you open up that pathway, you're going to have tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of more folks doing it. That's going to drop the price. That's also going to reduce the strain on the grid, and potentially would drop energy prices, the electric energy price as well. People do not unanimously agree on that, but that is one belief of this.
All right. Well, we will stay tuned and see how it plays out. Jeff Tiberi, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Talk to you soon.
Links to Jeff's reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Coming up, a flying bear, a ruined city, a strange pulsing plant. We're talking about science fantasy with Jeff and Ann Vandermeer on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.